Coffee Conversations about Influencer Marketing is brought to you by Influential, a strategic consultancy that takes the guesswork out of influencer marketing for your brand. We provide much-needed strategically crafted frameworks on how to implement influencer campaigns specific to your brand needs. Welcome back, and thank you for tuning in again to another interesting conversation about influencer marketing. As always, I am Anne, and I will be your host for this episode. Today, we have Matan Atias in studio talking to us about influence marketing and paid media and why this is a marriage made in heaven. He takes us through how this works and why it works so exceptionally well. Matan is a performance-driven creative marketer that has spent the last 8 years in the digital marketing and advertising technology space. He's passionate about connecting brands to consumers in a way that is meaningful to consumers but also impactful to marketers. He loves to fuse creativity and sales revenue-driven strategies to deliver on business objectives. So without delay, here's today's episode. Please remember to hit that subscribe button and share with friends and family if you find this of value. Hi, Matan. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. We are so excited to have you on today to tell us more about the exciting world of combining paid media and influencer marketing. So to kick us off, can you please tell us a bit more about yourself, why you got into paid media, and how that led to going into influencer marketing?
Sure. Hi, Anne. So firstly, thank you so much for having me. It's really a pleasure to be a part of this, and I'm excited to record this podcast with you and hopefully add some value. A bit about myself. How far back do you want me to go? Are we just talking career? Or are we talking about who I am and what I like?
Ooh, both, please. Let's get to know you.
Cool. So Israeli born, South African. I've been living in South Africa since I was about a year old. I have kind of always been passionate about really good design and creativity. I started my career off as a very bad designer and creative strategist, and actually co-founded an animation and design agency, which kind of morphed into a social media agency that was back in 2011.
That's amazing. Which agency, if I may ask?
It was called Outlaw, it was originally actually called the Stilo, and then it evolved into Outlaw Animation and Design. The business was acquired by a bigger kind of animation studio, and that was not really the direction that I wanted to go. I was always passionate about social media and social marketing, and particularly digital. And it was kind of like in its beginning stages or early stages at that point, around 2011, 2012. I joined a business called Popeye Media in 2013 as a creative strategist, particularly focusing on, social media strategy, community management, and a bit of paid, which was very much in its infancy at that stage. We actually used to build Facebook applications for brands, and the paid media was used purely to drive people through to these Facebook apps. I don't think those Facebook apps even exist anymore. And I guess kind of as the industry evolved, Popeye Media was very much at the forefront of that. And we spent a lot of time kind of growing the South African paid media market, particularly on social, being, Facebook and Twitter. And when I say Facebook, it's the Facebook family of applications. So Facebook, Instagram, Messenger. That's how I found myself in paid media. Fast forward.
That's an incredible road. So how did you get into influencer marketing then?
How did I get into influencer marketing? I think the two really go hand in hand, and particularly over the last few years. So maybe also serendipitous, one of the co-founders of Popeye Media was one of the seed investors in Webfluential, and we've stayed in close contact post them selling the business, and kind of had a lot of ideas about how the two could potentially be merged together. And in January this year, I made that move permanent, so I joined the Webfluential global team. Really kind of our idea was always to, we almost saw this in social 1.0, where we saw the organic reach of brands steadily start to decline. And I guess the same is happening with an influencer. So the idea was, you know, to take the two, pair them up and maximize the impact, but also really to, you know, to start to deliver more meaningful metrics for brands engaging in influencer marketing. So really to merge that art and science of influencer and paid together was kind of the idea.
Amazing. But let's take it one step back. What exactly is paid media in like a traditional sense? And then also, what does it mean for influencer marketing?
Sure. So when you say a traditional sense, are you referring to traditional or traditional digital?
No, like traditional digital.
Okay, cool. I thought so. So paid media is really, it's advertising in the digital space. So really the kind of forefathers of this was, paid search on the big search engines, you know, like Google. And then they obviously extended that to display advertising, which allowed you to programmatically buy space on, you know, third party sites. And then the rise of the social platforms came about, and Facebook dominated the space, really, Facebook and Twitter. And they started to offer, as they started to gain traction, you couldn't really have everything appear in a news feed in chronological order. And Facebook were the first to roll out something called EdgeRank, which is an algorithm that started to prioritize, you know, content in your newsfeed according to a few kind of metrics, time decay, relevance, etc. Because there was so much content being created that you couldn't have that chronology appear in the newsfeed. And then, of course, paid media was formed in order to allow brands to start to reach people within their newsfeed with even more relevance, and to ensure that, you know, they appeared in that kind of clutter. So that's really where it started to happen. In its infancy, it was like ads, so driving people to, you know, to follow your page on both Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and then it started to evolve more into objective driven advertising, so to drive things like traffic, lead generation, video views, etc.
Amazing. So now we're taking that into influencer marketing. So what does that mean for brands using influencer marketing?
So I think you've seen a very similar evolution, and we were actually discussing this the other day internally at Webfluential, kind of like the evolution of influencer marketing has very much followed the same trajectory that we saw on social. So 1.0 was, you know, paying a couple of influencers to create content. That content really reached a lot of their followers, because organic reach was super powerful at that point, and the algorithm favored organic content. And as we're seeing that organic reach declining, pairing the two up really allows you, one, to actually reach that influencer's audience, but two, to actually expand outside of that influencer's audience and use their content to reach, you know, a target audience that is relevant to your brand. So you can take all the powerful targeting capabilities that are available on these social channels, you know, things like age, demographic, even things like LSM targeting, their propensity to shop online. When we talk about Facebook, they've got about 2 billion users across their platform. And they've got so much information in terms of, you know, our behavior, our purchase behavior, be it online and offline. And that's not to kind of track our granular behavior and to listen to what we're doing. We're not that important to Facebook and the likes. It's really to allow them to create even more relevance and to allow brands to maximize on their ad spend. So when you pair the two together, you've got really strong content creators and influencers who resonate with their audience, and that really strong capability of targeting exactly and honing in on exactly who your customers are, or who your customers could potentially be. You've got a really powerful pairing of that two. So it's beautiful, authentic content created by influencers, by content creators that has that bit of locality, that bit of authenticity, and it takes that targeting. And, you know, we've even seen a decline on the paid media side. So initially adverts worked amazingly well. There was a few reasons for that.
Yes.
There wasn't much competition in the auction, meaning there weren't so many advertisers as there are now, and there wasn't so much proficiency in the sense that a lot of advertisers perhaps weren't doing the right thing or bidding for the right audiences. Whereas today, everyone is up to scratch. They know exactly what they're doing, how to reach these audiences, but the effectiveness is declining. And the main reason for this is content. Creative has always, you know, driven performance on paid social. So tapping into influencer content, tapping into that authenticity, that locality, is a really, really powerful, solution to the two.
Amazing. It is a little bit creepy how Facebook has got so much information on us. Well, not just Facebook, I suppose any digital platform, even like Google, knows everything about us. But I suppose it is for the greater good. Like you say, it's like how to serve us better content that we actually like and that's relevant to us, which is amazing. But what you're saying about paid media then with influence marketing is that we're combining kind of earned media with paid media. So it's two separate kind of disciplines in marketing that we are marrying, which seems like it's a fantastic game changer, especially in the influence marketing industry. So when kind of did paid media decide, I suppose, that influencer marketing would be such a great bedfellow, so to speak?
Well, I don't think that they had much to say in that decision-making process. It kind of, they were, I guess, forced into it. So the industry naturally, I mean, influencer marketing has been around since, you know, the last century.
Forever.
So, yeah, exactly. So the Marlboro Man, celebrities endorsing brands, that is essentially influencer marketing. But when influencer marketing moved into the digital space and, the social economy started to gain that trajectory, Facebook, Instagram, they had to start to create products that would, you know, one, be tailored to ensure that brands were maximizing what they were generating off influencer.
Mm-hmm.
Two, that they weren't actually losing out on ad revenue. Because, of course, you know, we don't get charged to be a part of these platforms, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. They monetize that platform by driving ad revenue. So they were very much almost forced into it and kind of had to react to what was already happening and really allow maximization and allow impact for brands that were already engaging in that influencer space.
Got it. So is that where the phrase kind of pay to play comes into play?
Yeah, absolutely. But again, I don't think that we should position it in the sense that, they forced brands into pay to play. As I said, when I first mentioned that EdgeRank and those news feeds
yes.
just became way too cluttered. And in order to reach people, you had to reach people with relevance too. So the most important thing to all of these social platforms is people. They never want to alienate their users. One, because we're their inventory that they kind of unsold to brands. And two, you know, it's all about the experience that we generate from it. So I think particularly, Facebook, I mentioned a lot, their mission has always been to connect people and then to connect businesses and people. And the only way to really do that is, as you say, pay to play.
Okay, so instead of having kind of a negative connotation to that, we should rather see it as them streamlining our experience.
Absolutely.
I like that. So would you say, and I think from what we've discussed now, you absolutely agree with this, that it's obviously an effective pairing, the two. But is it effective kind of across all social media platforms? So like, geez, there's so many. Obviously, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, TikTok, Reddit. I mean, we can go on and on. Or is there some platforms that are a bit more suited to paid media than others?
Sure, that's a really good question. So there's definitely platforms that lend themselves more towards paid media. Again, I'm going to talk about the Facebook family of applications that have been super smart in how they've done this and the products that they've built around it. So I think, you know, Facebook, Instagram very much lend themselves toward it. Twitter, not so much. They don't have a product that's available. And in terms of Snapchat, they definitely lend themselves towards paid advertising on the, you know, with that branded content and the influencer collaboration. And then I believe that TikTok is also moving into that space. So we've seen them kind of slowly rolling out advertising, but at this point it's very much still organically driven, you know. But as these platforms all gain trajectory, they have to, one, cash in on, you know, what's happening on their platforms and monetize what brands are doing there. But yeah, I think in South Africa particularly, it's very much at this point the Facebook family of applications that are doing it very well. And also, you know, they've got that critical mass.
Yes, very much so. But it's interesting that you say that Twitter doesn't kind of lend itself to I suppose, effective paid media, because there's also quite a lot of people on there and people talk a lot on there. And I see quite a few ads, not, look, admittedly not as much as anywhere else. But why do you think Twitter is not kind of cashing in on this a bit more than the Facebook kind of family?
So I can only make an assumption, and the assumption that I can make. So yes, Twitter has got a mature advertising platform in its native format. So that's that traditional paid media that we speak about, and very effective advertising. I think it's probably just a matter of time. So, you know, all of these platforms are very cautious when they launch any form of advertising. Same with TikTok. You know, they kind of dip a toe and they run a few betas and alphas, because the last thing you want to do is to alienate your users, and even more so, you don't want to alienate these influencers' audiences. So I'm sure they are very much working on a product very similar to that. I just think Facebook's always just been more aggressive and kind of much quicker to turn on revenue streams. But I'm pretty sure that Twitter will get there.
Well, I hope so, because it's such a beautiful platform as well. And if they can get it right, and like I say, not alienating audiences, it would be amazing.
Absolutely. But also think about the Twitter newsfeed versus the Instagram and Facebook. It's very much time-based and chronology-based, whereas the other two have an algorithm that, you know, features content according to those metrics I mentioned. So there are some key differences.
Of course. Okay, so let's talk about influencer content versus your standard brand ads, like your traditional paid media on your platforms. Do you think that when they combine, they work better than when they stand alone?
So as a blanket statement, absolutely. You know, in some of our product decks, we actually show that there's been an uplift, you know, between 8 and 11x in terms of return on ad spend when using influencer content. Yeah, absolutely. That's the blanket average that we've kind of seen. That doesn't mean that, you know, for every single campaign, there's still, you know, certain kind of nuances and rules that apply. And that's also, not, I want to disclaim the fact that it's not to say that we should can everything that we do on the traditional paid media side. It's very much a complementary product. They augment each other. But yes, there is definitely more return on investment. And the reason for that is authenticity. You know, we're and also we've created these blocks and filters towards advertising. We're bombarded you know, with ads in our news feed, with ads when we used to, back in the day when we used to be allowed out of home, driving around.
You mean like 2 months ago?
2 months ago, that's right, yeah. You know, we've become very good at blocking out ads that feel like ads. So when you pair up with an influencer, it's not an ad that feels like an ad. It's very much a human, human to human communication and connection. And it just feels a lot less like advertising, you know. And if we go back, so we said influencer marketing's been around forever, and that's very much the truth. And what else has been around forever is word of mouth marketing.
Oh, yeah.
So what we kind of think of influencer marketing in general is word of mouth at scale. And you know, if you take that and you take that word of mouth and you put some paid behind it, meaning you extend the reach, plus you also put some smarts in how you actually go about it. So those smarts are objective driven advertising. So, you know, driving traffic, driving conversions or signups. So think, you know, ads that are optimized towards that while using that authenticity, that locality and that beautiful content that these creatives are producing. That's what gives you the better return on ad spend.
Most of you know that Influential is our podcast sponsor. But did you know that my co-host Anne heads up the agency? And that is the first ever boutique agency in South Africa that specializes in developing strategy for influencer marketing. Anne and her team are experts in the field, and they've spent years honing their skills and knowledge about influencer marketing and at some of the country's biggest PR and media agencies. The moment that you think you might want an influencer campaign, make sure to call or email them first, because without strategy, you might not have the outcomes that you would like and are looking for. In addition to talking all things influence on this podcast, Anne also puts together the fantastic Influential newsletter that comes out every month. And this is another way for you to keep up to date with the industry. The link to latest newsletter is in the show notes. Check it out. And if you like, please subscribe. Anne's contact details are also on there. Let's keep the conversation flowing.
I suppose it all comes down to that, like you say, that human connection, also that relatability. And then people just respond to it so much better.
Absolutely. You know, funnily enough, we had a review actually a couple of days ago. One of the questions was, you know, why does content, it was influencer-driven content, and the client asked, why does the content where there's a few people in the video work better than, you know, when there's one or no people in the content? How interesting is that? And I used an example of, you know, when in my previous job where we were running a lot of insurance clients, we even saw that, you know, just with the static ads that we were creating, if we were showing kind of one person on their own in the car versus a family or a couple in that advertising, it actually lended itself far better and worked far better. And that's because of that human connection and because it becomes a lot more relatable. So we can see that that trend has also carried itself into influencer. So when we see multiple people in that content, we tend to relate to it more, engage to it more, engage with it more. And I don't know if that's, you know, true of or indicative of the time that we're in. Maybe the isolation has led us to, you know, to want more human connection, to want more people to connect with. But I don't think that it's just that in isolation. I think it's very much driven by human connection and relatability.
I was just going to say that I think humans are just programmed to like want connection, number one. We all want someone to understand and to be with. And I also think, especially during these times, it's probably just heightened that. I mean, I'm watching series and movies and stuff that was obviously shot before lockdown. And the moment I see like people hugging or outside, I'm like, oh my gosh, do you remember those times? It's kind of reminiscent. I'm like, I feel so bad. I just want to go outside and hug a friend.
Totally. I mean, as you say, like watching content these days and you see people shaking hands and you're like, wow, that's, I miss those.
That's times. Risky. That's so risky. Yeah. You shouldn't do that. What would you say is the biggest benefit of paid media for influencer campaigns?
So if I was to pinpoint it to one, it's reach. If I can extrapolate on that, then I would say it's targeted reach and objective driven targeting. So when I say that, I mean that you know, it's not just, hey, look at this from an influencer, but it's actually, hey, look at this and take an action. Has a call to action button that drives you to X, Y, and Z. And remember, I said that these platforms have so much information and so much artificial intelligence, so much so that, you know, they've got these tracking pixels all around the web. And of course, those are anonymized as users. But what those pixels show is intent. So, you know, do this experiment later on today. Go on to any insurance brand of your choice or and have a look at their actual website, and then go back into your news feeds and see how many lead ads you'll get from the different insurers. So what's happening there is that they're aggregating that intent. And then you know, if you set up your ads in the right way, saying I am targeting people who are interested in, you don't even have to add the interest targeting or anything like that. You've set up the objective as lead gen. Your page is a financial services page. And essentially your objective is obviously to generate that those leads. That algorithm then optimizes all of those ads to be served to people who are likely to convert according to your objective. So it's very important to get that objective right. And those objectives, like I've mentioned in this call, in this podcast, are, you know, very much traffic, lead generation, signups, etc. So it's very important to start with the objective and then to kind of work down from there. So I would always say, you know, start with what you start from the end goal and work backwards. Whereas, you know, traditionally you would go, let's pair up with influencer X, Y, and Z because they make really pretty content. And then you kind of work towards the objective. But I think, you know, work backwards. What are you trying to achieve? Which influencers lend themselves to it? What paid media objectives lend themselves towards that? And you should achieve success.
Yeah, we do the same thing. We always say to clients, stop when you think, I want to influence a marketing campaign. Stop, first of all, just thinking about names and build a strategy around them. No, no. Build your strategy with your objectives, and then let's see who's the best to kind of achieve that. So it's kind of the same with paid media as well then.
Absolutely.
So that lends me very easily into the next question is then, how do you effectively measure paid media? Because, you know, in marketing, everyone's always going on about ROI and there's always lots of talk. So when it comes to paid media, how do you measure that?
So again, that lends itself, paid lends itself even better to measurement than, you know, just organic. So you would rely on things like tracking pixels. So if you're driving people to complete something online, then that pixel would give you an idea of the entire funnel. So how many people, so one is impressions and reach, which would be natively tracked by the social channels, and you would understand, you know, what's your cost per reach, cost per impression, and then how many clicks did you drive, and then the pixel will start to give you an idea of how many conversions happened on your site. And the beauty is, you know, that you can actually measure that incremental uplift. So that you know, that pixel and that social platform knows who saw your ad. And then, you know, if they did or didn't click on that ad, it isn't actually relevant because there's something called impression value. And that's, you know, traditional marketers are very aware of what impression value is. And what that means is you see something on TV, a couple of days, you don't buy it straight from your TV, but a couple of days later, you go onto that website and you know, you can measure that uplift. So over here, you can actually have a very closed loop. Someone saw an ad in their newsfeed, they then converted, you know, on that site a few days later, a few weeks later, we can still relate the two together because we know that that impression was made and that conversion was made by Anne. We know who Anne is on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter, and then we can obviously close the loop like that. But again, what's the objective? And then that's how you measure. So there's no use, you know, setting up the objective. You know, if your objective is conversions, online conversions, there's no use setting up an ad for reach because then you actually skew your whole measurement. So it's very much measurable, and we rely on things like those tracking pixels in order to
close them. Yeah, it's pretty scientific and it's there. You can't really manipulate that, which is great. I love that.
Yeah.
So then a brand's running an influencer campaign, say, and they really want to do paid media behind some of its content. How do they choose which influencer content they put paid media behind? Because I'm assuming you shouldn't, or I suppose you can, but you shouldn't really put paid media behind every single piece of content on a campaign.
Sure, it's a tricky question. I think it's very much also budget dependent. So If and when I say budget, I mean like the paid budget. So, you know, if you've got 20 influencers making 2 posts each, that's 40 pieces of content. And if you've got a very small budget, take that small budget, split it across 40 pieces of content, you're not actually going to really achieve any statistical significance. And you're not going to be able to, you know, to optimize very well. So the idea is really to have enough budget behind each post in order to be able to optimize. So that's how I would decide which posts to actually go with. And then I think, you know, there can be multiple objectives that you can use there. So, you know, maybe the first phase of your influencer campaign is just awareness and reach, where you've got people talking about some specific product. So what you do is you take that content, you pair it up with paid, you set up an audience that you can then retarget with conversion ads if there's a secondary or third post. So the way I would prioritize which content to use is very much budget dependent. You do want to achieve statistical significance, and you do want to have enough to work with to optimize your spend.
Do you also need to look at things like the performance of the organic performance of an influencer post when you decide paid media, or does that not really come into play at all?
No, it definitely does come into play. So obviously something that performs well on organic would most likely perform well in the paid space. So that's a good point.
Amazing. So if I was a brand and I want to like decide now, oh, I've got a campaign coming up, I want to use some paid media, but I'm kind of a novice in the space, so I don't really know who to trust with my paid media. And I'm kind of shopping around for agencies to do this. What would be the pertinent questions you would say they should ask the agencies just to make sure that they can effectively apply paid media and they're not kind of wasting their time?
Sure. Sure. Very, very good question. And I think the answer to that is probably the questions that you've asked me today. Seeing, you know, how trackable is it? You know, what objectives would they be able to drive? And really kind of, it's always KPI driven. So I think really understanding the smarts, the strategy, and how they would be able to measure success. So an agency that would, you know, not be able to answer the questions around measuring success or, you know, moving the success metrics as, you know, top of the funnel or vanity metrics is always an alarm bell. So I think, you know, do they understand your business and your actual business objectives? And do they understand how to translate those business objectives into paid in order to actually move that needle? So that needle, you know, being, can I put what this agency is going to do on my balance sheet? So reach and awareness and impression very much have a place in marketing, but you can't put those on your balance sheet. So I think that that's how I would kind of understand if that is proficiency or not.
So put those hard questions to them. I love it. And then how do you see the partnership between paid media and influencer marketing kind of evolving over the next couple of years or even months? I suppose in digital, things move so quickly.
Yeah, sure. So I'm not going to be as bold as to say over the next couple of years. as you said, it's a super mercurial and fast moving industry, and it changes every single day. Over the next few months, I think that you will probably see a bigger uptake you know, pairing the two together. As I said, you know, from working very closely with Facebook and being a part of a Facebook marketing partner previously and kind of attending some of their conferences, such as F8, you can see that it's very much become a focal point for them. And every single month or so, I'm seeing more and more ad objectives being paired with influencers. So initially you could only run reach, you know, so you could only boost an influencer's post to more people. Now you can, you know, I think it was last week or the week before I saw that app installs were added to the branded content objective. So the next couple of months, we'll see an evolution in more and more objectives, advertising objectives being available to branded content, which obviously help drive those business results. And I think it's just going to become a little bit easier and less cumbersome. At this point, it's very cumbersome to run some of the campaigns that that I've mentioned. There's a lot of manual and tedious work in getting these influencers whitelisted. So I think
it's become
a lot more available. So from an objective point of view, and then a bit more intuitive and less cumbersome. And, you can even see from a global point of view, there's very much a trend where tech companies are specializing purely in the ease of pairing the two together, of whitelisting influencers. So I think ease and more objectives will become available in the next couple of months. And then we'll have to see, what kind of happens after that. So I think as long as you're maximizing the impact and using everything that's available in that toolkit, then you're in good stead for the next couple of months. But post that, we'll just have to
who knows?
Exactly.
Well, Zucky knows. Good old Zuckerberg should give us a heads up.
Yeah, I mean, even I'll drop him a message and see what insight I can get from him.
Please, so. I know you've got his WhatsApp number. Just send him a bit of a like a message there, madame. Come on.
Yeah, but even the Facebook family of apps are they're a super reactive business. So yes, they've got these roadmaps, but they very much that's been Facebook's success. They let the market kind of govern. And determine where they go. So I mentioned, how these guys pivoted into allowing influencer and paid media together. Again, it wasn't by choice. It was what the market was doing and where dollars were starting to go. And they had to obviously react to that and build products around that. So that's where they're very good and very strong.
But the next couple of months sounds incredibly interesting and also exciting. In the space, I mean, we know that in the last year or two, influencer marketing has become this like really legitimate marketing channel, and people are taking it seriously for the first time forever, especially in South Africa. And now we've got all these other things that's coming into play and partnering, and it's just all incredibly exciting to me. So I'm a bit of a nerd. Sorry.
If I can go there, me too. If I can leave like one more parting thought about that, it's so the next few months we'll see performance marketers entering the influencer space a lot more. Performance marketers being financial services, of course, always leading on that front. So I foresee, insurance companies, banks starting to use influencers in order to drive customer acquisition, e-commerce, really doubling down and maximizing on that impact. So a lot more performance within the influencer space, which has not been very synonymous in the past.
With
performance, it's traditionally kind of lent itself towards beauty and fashion and those kind of industries, whereas now you'll see a lot more of the direct response performance advertisers entering the space, and that will naturally grow the pool of influencers. It will naturally also grow like I said, the products that are available.
And that in itself is so exciting, because the insurance and the banking, all those kind of more, I suppose, more corporate or more serious businesses or kind of, what do you call it, segments or industries, have always been so cautious of using influencers. And it's really nice to start seeing them kind of coming out of their shells and realizing that you don't need to do influence marketing only one way. They can carve their own way of doing it, and it can be incredibly successful.
Absolutely. And it's funny that you say that, because, if I go back to when I joined Popeye Media and started kind of engaging with clients, I remember one of my first meetings being with a multi-brand insurance group. Came in there and proposed, using Facebook and Instagram to drive lead generation, short-term insurance. And I mean, we were close to getting escorted out of the building. And if you fast forward a couple of years later, that multi-brand insurance group became the most advanced advertiser on the Facebook family of apps and the biggest spender. And now, you know, these guys do not spend unless they get an actual return.
No.
So I very much see that kind of scenario unfolding with an influencer. So, yeah, I think that's going to be the next evolution.
Absolutely love it. Can you give us like a quick example of a recent campaign you've worked on and what was the result?
Yeah, sure. Let's stay away from insurance. I've spoken about insurance.
Oh, yeah.
So we recently actually teamed up with a e-commerce brand in South Africa, who, again, mm-hmm. very proficient in their paid media, driving acquisition, but kind of saw influencer as a nice to have. So what we decided to do is, you know, I knew the business quite well and what their objectives were. Their fastest path to conversion or best path to conversion is newsletter subscribers. So what we decided to do is to pair up with three influencers to create compelling content as to why you should subscribe to this newsletter. And we then paired that up with paid media. Now, as I said, they were very proficient and kind of gotten to that point where they had really optimized everything they could have possibly optimized on the paid media front. And what we managed to do is to drive that cost per subscription down 2x, so halve the cost per subscription. And even more so, the subscribers that we drove had a retention rate that was nearly twice as high as the traditional paid media. So what that means is the unsubscribes that we were getting from, you know, using influencer and paid were half that of using the paid. So what that means is we actually 4x'd their spends, because it's all good and well getting people to subscribe, but you obviously you know, need them to stick around and then to actually convert. Yep. And the beauty of that is that we got that started and kind of turned that into an always on strategy. And the evolution is mm-hmm. now that we're retargeting all these subscribers with paid media in order to convert them into actual shoppers.
Okay, that's amazing. So this has come very sadly to the end of our conversation. Thank you so much for joining us. I know. But I promise in the next couple of months, when all these beautiful things have rolled out, we'll have to have you back to give us an update. So that'd be great. So to close off, can you please tell our listeners where can they connect with you online if they want to know more about you and what you do?
Sure. So the obvious ones would be the social channel. So
yes.
You can find me on LinkedIn, Matan Atias. Or you could follow me on Instagram, MatanRTS1. I'm not a big tweeter. Yeah, I'd say, you know, follow me on LinkedIn, connect with me, drop me a message, DM me on Instagram, and we can hopefully spark up a conversation around what we could potentially do for your brand or agency. And I think it's very important
Fantastic.
That, you know, just to leave off, just to say from a Webfluential point of view that, you know, we're not here to compete with agencies. We're very much here to empower agencies to maximize that space. So agencies get in touch, brands get in touch, or individual people get in touch. I'm always keen on a conversation. So follow me, message me, and yeah.
Slide into his DMs there, guys.
That's
Do it. Okay. But what a wonderful and informative conversation. Thank you so much for educating us today and making us understand a bit better that all these paid media things and also all these things that we see going on is not just Facebook and their friends being creepy, but also just helping us to have a better experience online and on social media. So thank you, Matan.
Thank you, Anne. It's been such a pleasure chatting to you, and I hope that you invite me back on for another chat and that we can have a chat about the evolution and see whether these predictions were in fact correct and came to fruition. But otherwise, thank you so much. Take care, and I'll chat to you soon.
Thank you. We'll definitely do so. But have a good afternoon, Matan.
You too.
Bye.